Certainly welcome you to the GospelRadioNetwork.org. My name is Chip Horton, and I have the privilege of being your host today on Mornings for the Master. We're certainly tickled that you would think about us this morning and take the opportunity to tune in and study God's Word with us. Here in a few minutes, we'll be opening up the book of Nehemiah and trying to cover big letters there with quotation marks, trying to cover the first seven chapters. And so if you have your copy of God's Word with you, you can be opening to that. While you're doing that, we'll remind you of a few events that are going on around us. We have for some period of time now been reminding you about Don Blackwell, who is on his way to the Blanchard Church of Christ for a meeting from May the 14th through the 17th. And what a wonderful title he is going to be studying. Our good brother Richard brought us a great sermon recently from the lyrics of God Give Us Christian Homes. And Don Blackwell is going to lead that meeting between May 14th and the 17th on God Give Us Christian Homes. And so it's certainly a timely topic. It's a needed topic. It's an appropriate topic. You know, I have the ability, I guess you could say, to see the outward appearance of many homes as I pick up children on the bus every day. And you can't help but wonder sometimes. I just wonder what goes on inside those four walls based on the outward behavior of the children that you transport. Probably we'll never know, but certainly the call should still go out throughout our neighborhood and throughout the universe. God give us Christian homes. We need Christian mothers and fathers that are raising Christian children. And so we're appreciative of Don Blackwell's years of experience. He does a phenomenal job with World Video Bible School. The narration, the leading of all the DVDs and CDs that he is involved with. Just couldn't say enough good things about Don. He's a great servant in the kingdom. Anyway, that's at the Blanchard Church of Christ, May the 14th through the 17th. Their Sunday appointment times are 10, 11, and 6, and then nightly from Monday to Wednesday until the 17th, it'll be 7 p.m. Also, we want to remind you of one that's near and dear to us, the East Mountain Church of Christ, which is down around Gilmer, is going to have a tag team event. I almost need one of those ringside bells right now, but a tag team event with Benjamin and David McCain, father and son, will be having a meeting during that particular period of time, beginning on that Thursday the 18th. And so Dave is going to be speaking on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, and then his son Benjamin, the regular pulpit preacher there at East Mountain, will finish the meeting on Sunday. And so we're looking forward to that. He's going to be discussing the church Jesus built. Love Dave McCain and the work that he does. His excitement that comes out as he preaches. And so we look forward to that. You can call Brother Walter down there at Gilmer if you so desire. If you need directions, any of those type of things, he's left his number for you here, and that's 903-399-5110. Walter would be glad to hear from you. And we look forward to that event. I know that we're going down as a church group on the 20th, which is that Saturday. We'll be taking the van out of here and leaving about 6. And so they meet each evening, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at 7:30. And then the normal times to be able to listen to Ben on Sunday are 10:45. Or 9:45, 10:45, and then 7:30 that evening. So East Mountain's having a great opportunity to have the gospel proclaimed in that particular neck of the woods with Dave and Benjamin McCain from May the 18th to the 21st. And then one of the things that we've also been reminding you about is the meeting that is coming with John Ratliff down to the Emory Church of Christ there on Highway 69. We appreciate what goes on down there, and we're thankful that John has been called to talk about reviving our passion. Sounds a little bit like our recent workshop. And that is the idea of reviving, rekindling the fire. We had an opportunity to hear great lessons around that recently. But John is going to do a great job between May the 28th and the 31st there in Emory about this subject of reviving our passion. Their Sunday meeting times are 9, 10, and 6 on that Sunday. And then beginning on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday through the 31st of May, they'll be meeting at 7. They have left their phone number for you if you'd like to call them. Their number is 903-473-2658. Again, that's a meeting with John Ratliff from May the 28th to the 31st at the Emory Church of Christ over the topic of reviving our passion. Well, that's all that I have before me. I know that there's a lot more going on. I know that there's VBSs that are already gearing up. I know that there are summer lecture series that are about to kick off. You know, there's a lot getting ready to go on. And if you're listening out there this morning and you are planning on sending your kids to Camp Ida, I wore my Camp Ida t-shirt today, so I'd remind myself to mention this. make sure and get on there and start to do your registration, okay? We need to get these kids registered and signed up, ready to go. One of our good brethren the other day that monitors that was noticing that not very many people had signed up. It is our nature to be procrastinators because I know that the sessions are going to be full again. They always are. But let's go ahead and get those registrations in. If you're listening out there this morning and you have that ability, please go ahead and do that. It'll be here before you know it. Also, recognize there on the website, there is a special place there that you can listen in to Focal Point Live this week. Brother Ryan is down there doing a great work, having the ability to record all this for Telstar. He'll have the ability even later to make copies because of the great work that goes on there at Telstar. So if you'd like copies of Focal Point, you need to get in touch with him. He'd be glad to take those orders from you. You can just reach him through the network here if you want to do that, and that'd be, let's see, office@tgrn.org. So make sure and do that if that's something that you desire. But after we go off the air, don't do it now. Don't do it now. But after we go off the air, you can click over there and listen to what's going on at Focal Point. All right. Have we covered our bases? I think that we have. Anyway, I don't have my chat window up today. I apologize for that. I scurried in here even at the last minute. So sorry about that. I know that there's a lot of people that normally listen, and I bet you're out there again today. I know that Brother Chris McRae, one of our good overseers here, always listens and chimes in. And so we welcome Chris and even his good mother, Ann. If you're out there this morning, Miss Ann, we welcome you. Miss Frida, I know she's out there in her warm little cabin listening to us this morning. So good morning. Love y'all very much. I know my good wife, my faithful wife, is listening this morning. So we're thankful to have you, my darling. So many of you that regularly listen, Sean down in Florida, you know, we got folks up over the Red River that are listening. There's people all over the country that are listening. So feel free to chime in. There is always a chat going on in there. It's just that I can't see it at this particular moment. So thank you for being there and using that tool. But I just won't be able to interact with you today. Anyway, here we go with looking at the book of Nehemiah. Did you know that according to the Hebrew scholars, which I am not one of those, we're told that Nehemiah's name means consoled by Jehovah? That's kind of interesting, isn't it? Here's a great man with a great name. And so we're told that it means consoled by Jehovah. And we understand that even as we go into the book, He reveals to us that he was the cupbearer for the king of Persia, and he gets right into the matter as you start reading the book, because the king notices that there's something wrong with him. And so think about that for a moment. Nehemiah was evidently a jovial, happy guy, because the moment that he's not happy, the moment that he's not his normal self, the king says, hey, there's something different about this guy's countenance. You know, there'd be a good lesson for any of us. You know, wear a smile. Be that happy, jovial individual. Let that joy that should be in you resonate, and let others see that light, Matthew 5 and verse 16. Let that freely flow forth. So I think a lot about Nehemiah, even from that standpoint, as we get into looking at him. There's a lot of lessons that we can learn from the man himself. I taught a lesson sometime last year, I believe it was, maybe even in our summer series. But I was charged with talking about Nehemiah. And we noticed several characteristics that we would be comfortable emulating. He was a great individual to be able to follow in many ways. You know, Paul, 1 Corinthians 11, verse 1, says to be imitators of me as I also am of Christ. And so we need to be careful how we're living, because there's someone that's watching us. It might be grandkids. It might be neighbors. You never know who's watching that sermon that is your life. And so there's a lot of good things that we could mention about Nehemiah, and hopefully we'll do that in an effective way this morning. And so here we go. Let's see what we can discuss as it relates to Nehemiah. Are you a person of prayer? I hope that you are, and I bet you are. Nehemiah was a great man of prayer. He was a compassionate man. You begin to see these things unfolding as we open and start reading the book. He didn't really, in my estimation, seek self-glory, and so certainly none of us should either. But, you know, as he was going into the undertaking of this work that would be a historical event, it was all about the work, all about Jehovah's leading. And so he would be instrumental in that, and never causing people to look at him necessarily, right? He had a way about him that went forth in exercising judgment and wisdom. And so he made good decisions. He was a good example in many other ways. Don't want to belabor that. We need to go ahead and get into the text. But there's a lot of good things about Nehemiah. And I hope that you were able to pick up on that as you read through this particular lesson. But as you get into the text, you begin looking at verses 1 to 3 here in the very first of the book. And it says, the words of Nehemiah, the son of Hakaliah, and it came to pass in the month Chislu, in the 20th year, as I was in Shushan, the palace, that Hanani, one of my brethren, came, he and certain men of Judah, and I asked them concerning the Jews that had escaped, which were left of the captivity, and concerning Jerusalem. And they said unto me, the remnant that are left of the captivity there in the province are in great affliction and reproach. The wall of Jerusalem also is broken down, and the gates thereof are burned with fire. Well, here's a horrible report that's come. You know, my son was recently home, and one of his friends had related to him about the conditions over in Afghanistan. They had both been deployed there, and he was telling him about things that were going on in Afghanistan now that were different, either better or worse, in Afghanistan now. And some of those things troubled my son. He said, you know, all the work that we did there, and a lot of it has crumbled now. You know, a lot of insurgents had caused problems. And so he was troubled. Nehemiah was troubled in this particular result that he was hearing from his friend, one of his brethren, Hanani. In verse 4, it came to pass, when I heard these words, that I sat down and wept and mourned certain days and fasted and prayed before the God of heaven. Right there, we see that fallen countenance. We see how he is affected by the report that he's received. Maybe you have, you know, received a report, you know, that there's been a split in this congregation, or maybe in something not so necessarily tragic as splitting of a congregation, but maybe the death of an overseer. These things cause you torment sometimes, don't they? Cause you to weep, cause you to mourn. And so we're concerned about God's people. We're concerned with the things that are going on in God's eyes. And so when you get down to verse 5, he said, I beseech thee, O Lord God of heaven, the great and terrible God that keepeth covenant and mercy for them that love him and observe his commandments, let thine ear now be attentive and thine eyes open, that thou mayest hear the prayer of thy servant, which I pray before thee now, day and night. Watch this, not for himself, but who? For the children of Israel, thy servants, and confess the sins of the children of Israel, which we have sinned against thee, both I and my father's house have sinned. Sounds a whole lot like what Paul said in Romans 3 and verse 23, doesn't it? And so we have all faced that dilemma in our life at one point or another. And so here, here really is the very first mention that we could make a great application to in our lives, isn't it? When he hears this report, the very first thing that we see is he falls to his knees in prayer. You know, being a man of prayer is a great example to those that watch. You know, being an advocate of this avenue that has been created by God, you know, you think about this prayer, and I don't guess we'll necessarily read all of it. I know that you probably already read ahead of us today, but there's a lot of things in the prayer that really, I don't know, I guess they kind of stand as a model. You know, Jesus, as he taught his disciples to pray, would have kind of a model prayer, pray after this sort. They said, teach us to pray the way John taught his disciples to pray. And so, you know, it seems like there's this really awareness of what's going on around him. He realizes why they were where they were, and it was all because of sin. You know, this captivity that is mentioned, this is something that had been promised a long time before it took place. Israel and Judah both had been warned, you need to change your ways. You need to turn away from the transgression that is causing separation between you and your God. Even think about some of those words that Isaiah would use in Isaiah 59 at the top of the chapter. That's what sin does, causes separation. And one of the very first acknowledgments that Nehemiah makes here is that there was sin in the camp, you could say. And so this sin need to be removed. But before it was removed, it need to be addressed. And so when we've got a problem, we need to first address it, don't we? The first step is to address the problem. And so his prayer, it's got this invocation, I guess you could say, as we start. It's got a confession, pleading with God, please listen to me. Please bend your ear and hear me now. This urging, you know, in his voice. Please, dear God, listen to me. Hear what I have to say. And so it, I don't know, if you look there in your column reference, if you have one of those good column reference Bibles, you may very well see the reference that I've, excuse me, the reference that I've got, and it points to Daniel chapter 9, beginning at verse number 4. Why is that? It's because the prayers are very similar. And so notice that this is a good, if it's, you know, if this is the pattern that good men like Nehemiah and Daniel could use, then certainly, as it is recorded in Holy Writ for our example, it's a pattern that we could follow and safely know that God is pleased with this particular pattern. you know, the opening verses of both of these prayers, they're nearly word for word. Paul would often take opportunity to pray for the people. You even think over 2 Corinthians 11. It's 11, yeah, I'm recalling here, I hope, correctly. Down about verse 22 or 23, even as he is defending his apostleship there in that letter, which he never ever talks about himself, but it is necessary in this particular context. He talks about the things that he experienced, you know, being shipwrecked, naked, cold, in diverse problems, even with his brethren, his countrymen. But then the last thing that he mentions, if you'll remember, the thing that caused him sleepless nights, I would say, is the care of all the churches. Because it was the case that after he left town so many different times, the Judaizing teachers would come in and try to destroy the work that he had built up. And so his care for the churches, and that comes out in his prayers. I pray for you always. I pray for you without ceasing, remembering you in my prayers. Words like that always appears with Paul. And so we see this this pattern of supplication, if you will, in Nehemiah, Daniel, even Paul, and certainly with Jesus. In John chapter 17, as he would pray, he says, I pray not for me, but for these that would believe on my word. And he prays for the benefit of others. When was the last time, and, you know, just think within yourself, when was the last time you went through your church directory and prayed, even alphabetically? Start with the A's and go all the way to the Z's. Pray for those individuals one at a time. Maybe pray for one family every day. It's kind of an interesting thought, isn't it? You see, it's interesting that these individuals that are so much of a great example to us today, they were, to use the term loosely, they were prayer warriors. These were individuals that understood the power of prayer and used prayer to the benefit of others and themselves. And so prayer looks outward, prayer looks upward, prayer looks inward. And so prayer is something that we can see that was important to Nehemiah. He was a man of prayer. The Bible teaches us in many different places that we are to pray to God. We are to use that avenue that has been created. We are to take advantage of the mediator, Jesus the Christ, praying to God through Jesus. And so just notice that this is a great example. We could go on with many other examples in his life, surely. But the first thing that I ran across, even as noticing here, he was concerned about the people. He was evident in his life that he knew the power of prayer, and he would use it, even for the benefit of those with whom he was concerned. And so, as the chapter ends in verses 10 and 11, you'll see, O Lord, I beseech thee, let now thine ear be attentive to the prayer of thy servant and to the prayer of thy servants who desire to fear thy name and prosper, I pray thee, thy servant this day, and grant him mercy in the sight of this man, for I was the king's cupbearer. And so what a powerful way to open this particular record of Nehemiah with prayer. You know, a lot of times when we as men meet for the business of the church, maybe it is the case that you're in a situation personally, like you find in Matthew 18, where you need to resolve a conflict with another brother or sister, whether it is, a city council meeting. You know, one of the things that we admire the most, at least from my standpoint, is when any of these type of meetings begin with prayer. Prayer is something that is a, I guess we could say, it's kind of like an icebreaker, isn't it? It's something that causes us to reflect. It's causing introspection. Prayer is a powerful tool. Wow, look at this. 25 minutes after the hour, and we hadn't even got past the first chapter yet. Love to talk about the Bible. Let's look into Nehemiah chapter 2 as we turn the page. As you look into the top of the chapter here, beginning at verse number 1, it's obvious that God answers his prayer. His request is granted. As you move forward, it came to pass in the month of Nisan, in the 20th year of Artaxerxes, the king, that wine was before him, and I took up the wine and gave it unto the king. Now, I had not been before time sad in his presence to the point that we talked about even at the top of the broadcast. Wherefore the king said unto me, why is thy countenance sad, seeing thou art not sick? This is nothing else but sorrow of heart. Then I was sore afraid, thought that maybe the king was about to come down on him, right? Hannah and I had brought this sorrowful report to him. He had grieved, he had wept, he had prayed, he had fasted, and it brought about this countenance change in him, so much so that the king would ask about him. So you get down to about verse 4, the king says, for what dost thou make request? Wow. You have the ear not only of the creator of the universe, but now you've got the you've got the ear of the king of Persia. You know, that's a luxury that not many people had in that day and time. To the point of prayer, you and I have the ear of God all the time. His eyes and ears are over the righteous. For what dost thou make request? So I prayed to the God of heaven, and I said unto the king, if it please the king, and if thy servant have found favor in thy sight, that thou wouldest send me unto Judah, unto the city of my father's sepulchre, that I may build it. So here he has the opportunity to tell the king what's on his mind, and he doesn't hold back any punches. He tells him, look, I need to go back to my homeland because there's a business that needs to be taken care of. My city's burnt down. The walls are down. I have a responsibility, and I would ask your permission to let me go. In verse 7, he says, moreover, I said unto the king, if it please the king, let letters be given to me to the governors beyond the river, that they may convey me over till I come into Judah, and a letter unto Asaph, the keeper of the king's forest, that he may give me timber to make beams for the gates of the palace which appertain to the house, and for the wall of the city, and for the house that I shall enter into. And the king granted me according to the good hand of my God upon me. I thought about Esther for such a time as this, right? And so here's Nehemiah, torn because of what was going on, knowing that he had to leave. Yeah, think about where he was. So many great lessons in the Bible. Think about what Abraham gave up. He surrendered his country. He surrendered his kinsmen. He surrendered a lot of amenities. You know, a lot of examples that you see in Abraham that you see here. Nehemiah was in a comfortable position, wasn't he? I don't think Nehemiah was hurting for anything. food, shelter, raiment, the whole nine yards. I think he was in a comfortable position. How easy would it have been for him to just kind of take back, eat, drink, and be merry? Like the foolish rich man in the New Testament. He saw the need to do a burdensome task. This was nothing that was going to be easy. And as you see the rest of these chapters play out, you know what he went through. But nevertheless, he was not going to be complacent. He was not going to stand still. He was not going to remain neutral. He was going to act. Maybe here's another point that we can make. With knowledge comes responsibility. We can make that point, can't we? You know, and the age-old example, when somebody, you know, when you see the fire across the street and your neighbor's house is on fire, what do? You get out your lawn chair and watch? No, you get out and you call 911. You take the fire hose. I mean, you do anything you can to help, because with knowledge comes responsibility. And here, as he learned of the situation there, even in the city of Jerusalem, he made up his mind. He set his heart toward the work that needed to be done. He told the king about it. The king granted him that privilege. And then in verse 9, I came to the governors beyond the river and gave them the king's letters. And so the letters had been granted to him. these permissions had been given to him by the king. And so he is moving forward with his plan and will have great success. To have the backing of the king of Persia is a pretty big deal. And to have the backing of the creator of the universe is even bigger, far still. So we see him moving out into the work that is before him. And so please notice that Nehemiah has the mind to work. And he's going to even use that mind that he has to put the people to work. And so you might remember over in chapter 4, we hadn't quite got there yet, but it said that the people had a mind to work. But you know, before they had a mind to work, Nehemiah had a mind to work. And so he goes on his way. He takes these letters with him. He comes to the particular city. He arrives and rests, even as verse 11 shows us, for some 3 days. And so it seems to me that he didn't come in, you know, with a blazing caravan of 100 horses and all kinds of pomp and circumstance. It's like he came in the back door and resided, you know, in the downstairs room or something. You know, it's not about Nehemiah. It's about God's glory. It's about the rebuilding of the wall, the work that is before him. He comes in with a mind to work, and he's very wise with what he is doing. You know, and here, this surveying that we're looking at, even as we go forward, it reminds me of that passage in Luke chapter 14, where we are encouraged down about verse 27 or 28, before you build that tower, count the cost. Here he is making this survey. He goes out and he looks at the gates. He looks at the pools. He looks at the various pieces of the wall, and he does it in a private fashion. You know, Solomon had prayed for wisdom and understanding, and the Lord gave it to him. And I know that Nehemiah had prayed for wisdom and understanding because of the way he acts. God had granted those prayers. God had granted him that wisdom and that understanding. And so he didn't come in with pomp and circumstance. He went in a private fashion and made this survey. And as you move forward, like even in verse 17, I said unto them, you see the distress that we are in, how Jerusalem lieth waste, and the gates thereof are burned with fire. Come, let us build up the wall of Jerusalem, that we be no more a reproach. And so he is starting the ball to move. And so he is starting to encourage the people to get to work. I know that you've already read the rest of this. But, you know, there would be many roadblocks that would come his way. There would be people to stand in his way and laugh and scoff. There would be people that would try to stop the building of the wall physically, even to the point that the Israelites would have to stand on the wall with a shovel in one hand and a spear on the other. You know, it got pretty bad. But nevertheless, his mind to work was something that would bleed over into the people of Israel. He said, let's get to work. Let's do what it is that God has for us to do. And so, as he relates to the people that God had given him the upper hand, as you might say, God had given him the words, God had sent him on his way, that was encouraging to them. Whoa! We're studying Exodus here on Sundays and Wednesdays. What was the first thing that Moses was told? You go and tell them that the great I Am has sent you, and they will believe, even with the signs and wonders that you can perform before them. Let them know that God is the one that has sent you and charged you with this great work. Then you come to a verse like verse 19, but... You know, there's always something coming when you see that B-U-T, right? But here comes Sanballat and Tobiah and Geshem. These individuals that continually, it's like whack-a-mole. And maybe you're not familiar with whack-a-mole, but it's like, you know, like in your backyard where the ants are, you stomp out one pile and they pop up somewhere else. Here's these guys, these three individuals that are going to be a thorn in the side of the work. Sanballat, Tobiah, and Geshem continually playing this whack-a-mole deal here with the Israelites, continuing to show up all the time. And they've got a force to face, because as you come into chapter number 3, we're not going to go through and read all of this, but there is a record right here of all the faithful workers that would stand up and follow the leadership of Nehemiah when he said, let's build this wall. So Nehemiah chapter 3 is all about this list of individuals. And so you see the job that they were given to do. You see that they were put in a place, they were given a job, and they went to the work. And so each one of these sections is broken down. There is this gate and that gate. There's the valley gate to the armory. All of these places. Here's the point. Wherever God puts you, do the work. And notice that each of these places, we are reminded that the people are standing shoulder to shoulder. These individuals are working on this project, you know, nearly hand in hand. And that's the way the kingdom works. We are plowing in the field side by side. And so when your brother falls down, Galatians 6, when your brother or sister falls down, help them back up. Bear you one another's burdens. Help your brother along, because we're in this together, right? Eric uses terms like battle buddies, right? You've got to have a battle buddy. You watch his back, he watches yours. And that's what's going on here. They're battle buddies on the wall. So chapter 3 is full of great admonitions. One of the greatest, I think, is that they were working hand in hand to get this job done. And as you would see the shortness of the time that it took, they did a good job. Right? So you come into chapter 4. Boy, we're still running out of time. What happens to the clock? When you run into chapter number 4, the very first thing that you begin to see is Satan's wily, crafty devices, right? Anything to oppose good. That's where Satan is. As you begin at the top of chapter 4, it came to pass. There's that but again. Do you notice that? But it came to pass that when Sanballat heard that we builded the wall, he was mad. And he took great indignation and mocked the Jews. And he spake before his brethren and the army of Samaria and said, what do these feeble Jews? What do these feeble Jews? What are they doing? Will they fortify themselves? Really? Against us, the great army of Samaria? Will they fortify themselves? Will they sacrifice? Will they make an end in a day? Will they revive the stones out of the heaps of the rubbish which are burned? You know, we have adversaries in this day and time, don't we? Oh, they'll never be able to grow that congregation, or they'll never be able to, you know, whatever, the fill in the blank. Well, the lesson that I think is easy to take away from this, because we have the rest of the story, we know that the wall was builded. We know that, you know, even in a certain day and time, it says that they dwelled in their secure city. So they succeeded in the work, certainly in Nehemiah's leadership. But please be reminded that as we go through here, it's easy to see that Satan was at work. You know, one of the very first things that we're seeing a problem with within the camp, if you will, is the purity of the race was really being deteriorated because of the various marriages and friendships that had taken place, the commercial ties that had been made. And so immediately, you know, Nehemiah gets to work on this. He immediately acknowledges that there's sin in the camp. And, you know, any way that Satan can deteriorate the purity of the kingdom, he's going to do it. You might remember, even as you look into the later part of the chapter, which Brother Macrier, Lord willing, will cover tomorrow. The high priest, Eliashib, desecrated the temple by making up one of the chambers there in the temple to be an apartment for this guy Tobiah that we mentioned a moment ago. And it was all because of a marriage alliance. You know, so any way that the devil, the adversary, can get in the back door and deteriorate like termites, he's going to do it. Absolutely, he will do it. You might remember that even toward the end of the book again, the tithes, T-I-T-H-E-S, the tithes, those giving those offerings for the support of the priest in the temple worship, they were withheld. Things weren't going as they were supposed to go. And so they were going against the law of God. And so anytime that you notice that error pops up and is not corrected, problems occur. And so immediately Nehemiah is facing this opposition, and he is going to take about the work of not only building the wall, but fixing these problems so that the work can be successful. You know, one of our good brothers prays, if there's any sin in my life, please forgive that the prayer on the benefit of these people might be heard. You know, we need to take care of sin first, don't we? And so this ridicule that we hear beginning even at the top of chapter 4, this is really common for the devil, isn't it? You see a lot of this going on in Washington right now, sadly, ridiculing one another. It's like a kindergarten class. He touched me. You know, grow up. But that's what I hear in these adversaries. They sound like a bunch of kids. And so this idea of ridicule, it's a common weapon in Satan's tool belt. It can be cruel. It can certainly be effective. People say sticks and stones may break your bones, but words can never harm you. Words can absolutely harm you. Words are something that we can let roll off our back, like off a duck's back, but it can be hurtful, absolutely. And so words, this ridicule, you know, if a fox go up, wouldn't the wall fall down? You know, these ideas that you guys are nothing coming out of the mouth of the adversaries would be cruel and unusual punishment. Even as you look forward in this particular passage down about verse 7 and 8, conspiracy, conspiring one against another, right? Intimidation. you know, a lot of times we talk about nowadays things like blackmail. People are intimidated and blackmailed because something is had against you that you don't want to get out, right? People are blackmailed. That is certainly nothing that is pleasing before God's eyes. When ridicule and scorn failed in the eyes of these, adversaries, guess what they did? They turned it up a notch, and they went back to conspiracy. Another thing, the device of compromise. This gets on into, chapter 6. Sanballat, Tobiah, and Geshem, the three that we mentioned a moment ago, were set on destroying God's work. No doubt about it. And so they decide that we need to have a meeting. We need to make Nehemiah see things our way. We need to cause him to compromise. And so he would say, come on and come down into the plains of Ono for a meeting, Nehemiah. And I've heard many good sermons along those lines. Beware of the plains of Ono. You know, when these types of meetings are called, that is a proper response. Oh, no. And that's exactly the way that Nehemiah would respond. Why should I come down and meet with you when I've got such a great work underway up here? Sorry, guys, I'm not able to make it at this time. And so they kept coming back. They kept coming back. They were relentless. They came back several times. You've got to come down here and meet with us. And he turned down the adversaries every single time. You get into farther into chapter 6, and you see another form of the adversary's attack in false reports. You know, the idea of slandering somebody. Again, not to keep beating a dead horse, but a lot of that going on in Washington. Slandering somebody. If you throw something out there long enough and hard enough, people are going to start to believe it, right? And a man's reputation could be ruined by something that is slanderous, that is false, even at its very core. And what a horrible thing for a person's name to be dragged through the mud. And so, as you see this dangerous weapon of our adversary, you think about the many people that have fallen through the ages because of false words, because of slander. Another thing that we come to find out, even in chapter number 6, is this false prophet. Was it Noida? I'm trying to remember. This false prophetess that would come and be another one of the pieces of the adversary's attack, right? This false forecast, right, for God's people, unless they would compromise with the enemy. You know, probably a lot that we could say about Satan's devices, but please just notice that that's another one of the great lessons that we can take away from Nehemiah. Do not allow Satan's devices to cause you to lose your soul. You think about the very opening pages of your copy of God's Word in Genesis chapter 3. There was the lie of Satan. Oh, you shall not surely die. Right? But they did. They did. And so don't believe the adversary, because he's only out to do you harm. You come into chapter number 5. There's complaints that come forward about, interest charges, suffering of the poor. You know, the people in the upper class were taking advantage of the people that were of a lesser class. And so immediately, you know, Nehemiah is going to go about the business of correcting this particular problem. And the same thing goes on today, doesn't it? Those that are in an upper class many times will take advantage of those in a lower class just to pad their own pockets. And as you would come into even the latter part of this chapter, in verse 14, still here in chapter number 5 of Nehemiah, moreover, from the time that I was appointed to be their governor in the land of Judah, from the 20th year even to the 30th year of Artaxerxes the king, that is 12 years, I and my brethren have not eaten the bread of the governor. But the former governors that had been before me were chargeable unto the people, and had taken of them bread and wine beside 40 shekels of silver. Yea, even their servants bear rule over the people. But so did not I, because of the fear of God. You see, there is a way to live righteously among the people and before the Creator of the universe. And Nehemiah had set his heart to do just that. And so notice that he is being an example of the believers, as Paul would tell Timothy, be thou an example. And so Nehemiah is set to do, you know, the best way to bring about a positive change is to be a part of it. And Nehemiah had set his mind to seek the will of the Lord, to do the will of the Lord, and to teach, sounds like another man I know about, in Israel, statutes and judgments. And so be like Ezra, and be like Nehemiah. Be like Daniel, and never bend or never bow. When you come into Nehemiah 6, we have this plains of Ono that we mentioned just a moment ago as we talked about the wily craftiness, the devices of the devil. There was this great conference that was called. you see, when one thing doesn't work, you have to come up with something else if you're that type of an individual. You know, if you can't break in the back door, then break in the front door. You know, do something different. You can't find them at home, go to work and find them there. Here's this conference. This is even after the scorn. This is even after, you know, the compromise that was suggested. Here we see, you know, it continues to get worse. We've got to find a way to get to Nehemiah. We've got to find a way. But they never would they? And so, verse number 2, Sanballat and Geshem sent unto me, Nehemiah says, come, let us meet together in one of the villages in the plain of Ono. But they thought to do me mischief. You see, here's the ready understanding mind of Nehemiah on display here. He says, I understand what's going on. And certainly, friends, we need to be, here's a term for you, walking circumspectly, as Paul would say. That is, noticing what's going on around you, you know, thinking about what the adversary will do next. We were trained, years ago in truck driving school. You know, when you're behind the wheel of that rig, you need to be constantly looking for outs. You know, is there a shoulder that's available? If you have to go to the left because of an accident, you know, is there a car next to you? Is there a bridge abutment that you should avoid? Do you always need to be looking for an out? You know, be thinking ahead two or three moves, kind of like in chess. And that's what we see going on even in Nehemiah's mind. He is looking forward. He understands that there is mischief in their minds. And so he's not going to go down to this particular meeting. And you get down to verse 5, then sent Sanballat his servant unto me in like manner the fifth time with an open letter in his hand, wherein was written, it is reported among the heathen, and Geshem said it, that thou and the Jews think to rebel. For which cause thou buildest the wall, that thou mayest be their king, according to these words, and thou hast also appointed prophets to preach of thee at Jerusalem, saying, there is a king in Judah. And now shall it be reported to the king according to these words. Come now, therefore, and let us take counsel together. If you don't come and meet with us, we're going to take this lie to the king and maybe even have you executed. Well, he wasn't setting himself up to be king, was he? Right, absolutely. No more than I'm setting myself up to be, you know, president. But nevertheless, this was a tactic of the adversary, right? We're going to scare him to death. We're going to force him into compromise. Again, think about a powerful passage like Ephesians 6. Put on the armor of God. Put on the whole armor of God, because, you know, the first attack might be at your foot. And then when that doesn't work, the next attack may very well be at your kneecap. And when that doesn't work, the next attack may be in your groin area. And on it goes, all the way up to the head. So wear the whole armor of God, because you never know when the attack is coming. You never know where the attack is coming. But having done all to stand, therefore, stand, Paul says, right? And so that's what Nehemiah is doing. He's got on his armor. He's standing firm against these adversaries. You can mock me. You can laugh at me. You can try to slander my name. You can bring up lies like this to the king. You can do anything you want, but I am ready, and I have God on my side. What a great example we see then in Nehemiah as a great leader. You know, each of us can try to some measure today to be more like Nehemiah, couldn't we? I know I've got room for improvement. What about you? You know, Nehemiah is a wonderful book. This seventh chapter, the way that it comes to a close, we have the opportunity in these many verses, with some, was it 73 verses? We have before us this genealogy, as it were, this great listing of names, this this reward for it. This is something that is important and shouldn't be just read over. I recognize that I don't have the time this morning to address it, but there's nothing that's placed in the Bible by inspiration, by accident. Pay attention to the things that are in this chapter, even though it may take a while to get through it and read and pronounce. There is something there for everybody, even in a passage like chapter number 7. The city is carefully guarded as you start at the top of the chapter, and you see the individuals that would do the work of the Lord and be remembered and recognized for it. You'll be remembered and recognized for your labor one of these days as your name is read out of the Lamb's Book of Life. What a great lesson as we live our mornings for the Master this morning. I'm grateful that you're with us today on the Gospel Radio Network. I'm grateful for the opportunity to study through these first 7 chapters, and we look forward to the exegesis that will be on the tongue of our good brother Chris tomorrow as he, Lord willing, looks at the remainder of this book. We're grateful for your time today, thankful that you were here, and we look forward to the rest of the day's programming here on the Gospel Radio Network, and I hope you do too. It's going to be a great day. Love each one of you, and God bless.
Been listening to Mornings for the Master on the Gospel Radio Network. Remember to join us each weekday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Central Standard Time or catch the replay at 9 p.m. Central Time. You can also contact us at mornings@tgrn.org if you have any questions we can help you with, or if you have events you would like to submit to our bulletin board, or just with general feedback about the program or network. We would love to hear from you. As we've had opportunity to spend time with the Master this morning in His Word, let's remember His words in Luke 6:46, when He said, "Why call ye me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say?" He goes on to say in verse 47 and 48, "Whosoever cometh to me and heareth my sayings and doeth them, I will show to you whom he is like. He is like a man which built an house and digged deep and laid the foundation on a rock. And when the flood arose, the stream beat vehemently upon that house and could not shake it, for it was founded upon a rock." Let's show the wisdom of that builder and go now to live for the Master.